I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And this is why we love our next guest, college football writer and insider for CBS Sports and cbssports.com. It's because he is working on a Labor Day, and that is our friend Barrett Salib. Barrett, good morning. How we doing?
I'm good, D.A. Yeah, it's Labor Day, right? But it's still college football season, day five of our five-day opening weekend bonanza. And I tell you what, by Monday morning of this weekend, every single week, or every single year, I should say, there's a lot of coffee in my house.
That's what I'm talking about. A lot of coffee today, and that's why you're up early with us. And you're based in SEC country, so I think we have to start at Rocky Top. How alarming is it not only that Tennessee lost to Georgia State, a team that was 2-10 last year, but that outside of a garbage time Tennessee touchdown, Georgia State would have won by two scores at Rocky Top?
Yeah, it's very concerning. And look, I thought Jeremy Pruitt was the right guy for the job when he got hired. I did not think they should have hired Greg Schiano, if you remember that mess from a year and a half ago. But after what happened against Georgia State, I certainly have my doubts about Jeremy Pruitt. And it's not just the loss, although that's inexcusable. It's the fact that if you look at him on the sideline, he looked very disinterested. He looked distant. At one point, they had to go try to find him because he was nowhere to be seen during the game. In fact, he was kind of hidden inside of a defensive huddle on the sideline. That part of it was alarming. There was no sense of urgency. There was no emotion. There was nothing. And I can't explain that because, you know, any good coach, you don't have to be Nick Saban out there, like losing your mind. You don't have to do that. But you have to be, you know, communicating with your coaches, communicating with people in the booth. And he just kind of sat there almost like he was not interested in coaching that team. So that's the most concerning part. And I live in SEC country. I know a lot of Tennessee fans. This is as low as I've ever seen that program because they feel like there is no escape. For 10 years, they've been in this fans of this program that has been the most dysfunctional program in college football, and it just keeps getting worse. It's like there is no rock bottom for Tennessee. It's like this never-ending pit of misery.
But you can't really fire Jeremy Pruitt already, and it's only week one of the season. And so what's best-case scenario for Vols fans this year?
Well, best-case scenario is still a bowl game because the schedule is still relatively easy. It's still, I guess, in theory, attainable. They definitely have to beat BYU this weekend for that to happen. But I think six wins at most is where they'll be. And quite honestly, D.A., I have a hard time painting a picture in which that happens. So, you know, they'd have to improve on both lines of scrimmage, and I don't know if they can do that just because the talent's not there. So, you know, I guess if you had to create an upside, six wins would be it, but you would have to win, if you're Tennessee, basically all of your toss-ups, of which there aren't that many based on what we saw, although the SEC East didn't exactly have a great day on Saturday, and then spring an upset or two. That's going to be easier said than done for that crew.
Barrett Salib joins us from college football, from CBS Sports, covering all things college football. So let's now look at the big one, and that was Auburn and Oregon. Did you think that Mario Cristobal and the Ducks kind of mismanaged that game away in their lead in that one?
Yeah, they definitely mismanaged it, especially towards the end when Justin Herbert got hurt, which I have not seen anything to suggest that he actually got hurt. It looks like they kind of knocked knees, but that's about it. I don't really know what was up with that, and then you know, not really knowing the situation, not knowing if you could go in or come back out after they used a timeout. They used another timeout after that to try to figure that out. So, they mismanaged it for sure. With that said, you know, Auburn's defense played its tail off in the second half. And we saw that from Auburn's defense a lot last year. Almost all those same guys returned. And so, yeah, you could say that that Oregon and Mario Cristobal mismanaged that game, and I think that's definitely accurate. I would not say that that's the reason they lost that game, though. I think the biggest thing is that in the second half, they just really struggled to keep Auburn's defense at bay, as opposed to the first half when the offensive line for Oregon really won that battle more times than not.
When it comes to what we saw from Bo Nix, does it feel like that was the right move? Gus Malzahn took a risk in starting a true freshman in a season where he certainly had pressure to win, but was he validated with the way that Bo Nix came back in that game and threw that game-winning touchdown?
Yeah, I think he was. I mean, look, Bo Nix made some freshman mistakes, and you don't want that. I mean, it's especially in a big spot like that. You do also sort of expect that. So, you know, you sort of have to live with that if you're Gus Malzahn. I saw some folks on Twitter saying during that game that they've got to make a move to Joey Gatewood. You don't name Bo Nix your starting quarterback just to pull him in the third quarter of the opening game. Like, so Gus married himself to Bo Nix, and I thought towards the end, Bo really did, you know, show why. It wasn't just the game-winning touchdown. It was how he managed that final drive, the composure he kept during the final drive, and really in the fourth quarter, you know, as a whole, that fourth quarter, fourth down dive to get the first down. He didn't panic before he took off. And then, you know, yeah, Bo's fine. I think for Auburn, though, the concern is the offensive line. It was bad all year last year. They played one good game. It was the bowl game against Purdue. That's why they scored all those points. It's not because Gus Malzahn called plays. And then against Oregon, you know, the offensive line looked average at best again. And Bo, to his credit, disguised that a little bit. But he also ran into some problems because of that a little bit, because he didn't know where pressure was coming from. And it is hard to trust, you know, who was going to block effectively at any given time. So I thought Bo did fine. I think for Auburn, you have to wonder, okay, is this game the same kind of game that Auburn won against Washington to start last season, where the sloppiness sort of became a trend, or was it just sort of first game jitters? To me, anyway, I think that this Auburn team is going to be a whole lot like last year's. Great defense, bad offensive line, good quarterback play, because Jarrett Stidham was good last year, but that quarterback play is going to be limited because the offensive line struggles a lot.
Barrett Salee, CBS Sports, joining us to break down week number one of the college football season. USC was already on the outside looking in to the Pac-12 and the top 25, and now they lose their starting quarterback, JT Daniels, for the season, torn ACL and MCL. How much trouble are the Trojans in now?
Yeah, they're in a lot of trouble. Now, to his credit, Keaton Slovis came in, you know, people that were awake late Saturday night. So he came in and was pretty effective. I mean, you know, for a guy who, you know, was playing high school ball and really wasn't that highly recruited, for him to sort of get thrust into action, I thought he did okay and really showed why he beat out Jack Sears and Matt Fink as the backup quarterback. And those two guys were highly touted recruits as well. He came in and beat them out. So I think that he showed why that was the case against a really good Fresno State defense. How different will it be for him now that teams are going to prepare for him? I think that's the biggest question. Obviously, Stanford coming up next week, you couldn't ask for a more difficult opponent in your first start if you're Keaton Slovis. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely hurts USC. How much of a drop-off will there be? There certainly will be some. I think, though, if they can put him in situations where they give him half-field reads and rely on those great wide receivers to do the work for him, they still can compete in the Pac-12 South. Clay Helton can still keep his job as the head coach, but it is certainly more challenging right now. I can't wait to watch that Stanford game this weekend to see what USC looks like, because, you know, I already was super intrigued about USC just in general because of all the different factors sort of pulling them in different directions. But now this curveball is not necessarily a killer, but it certainly is more challenging for an offense led by Clay Helton that I think is actually – Clay Helton's a good play caller. Clay Helton's a good coach. But now he's got to adjust with a ton of pressure on his shoulders. I can't wait to watch it.
Yep. Talk about a curveball. This is a 12-6 knee-buckling curveball for the USC Trojans. One of your college football playoff picks was Ohio State. I want to know, out of the two teams that had new quarterbacks that are in that race, who's most impressive to you, Justin Fields and Ohio State this weekend, or Jalen Hurts and Jalen Hurts from Alabama now at Oklahoma last night?
Well, it's Justin Fields, and first let me start with Jalen Hurts. I mean, we knew Jalen can run, and I think the biggest thing we saw last night is that Lincoln Riley designed plays to Jalen Hurts' running strengths, which is, you know, between the tackles and more as a bruiser, which is huge because we haven't seen Lincoln Riley have to adjust his offense all that much as a head coach. So, and as far as Jalen passing, I mean, look, I think Jalen's a better passer than he was early in his Alabama career, too. But Houston looked very disinterested in covering wide receivers. So,
I'd say.
Let's hold off on that. But that said, he did great. Justin Fields hadn't played, right? Like, we sort of knew what we were going to get from Jalen to an extent. Justin Fields hadn't played. And for him to score four touchdowns in the first, 10 minutes and 8 seconds or whatever it was, you know, that was the Justin Fields that I saw as a high school prospect just up the road in Kennesaw, Georgia. I said when he was a high schooler, he's as Deshaun Watson as any quarterback I've seen since Deshaun Watson played at Gainesville High School. And you saw that for Ohio State. And that silenced a lot of critics because there were those in the camp of, well, Justin Fields is terrible because look what he did as a freshman at Georgia. It wasn't that impressive. But I think what you saw and what you should take notice of is that at Georgia, he was asked to do things that he wasn't good at because they wanted to develop him as a player. Ryan Day is going to do give him what he is good at, and we saw that for Ohio State. So in terms of impact, in terms of importance, I think Justin Fields' impact and his performance is far more relevant to the college football playoff discussion than Jalen Hurts'.
Over-under for Waffle House hits this college football season from now until the championship for you?
Well, there's always one a mile up the road anywhere in Georgia, so I guess I shouldn't say they're close. They're all close to each other. Well, my son loves this probably twice a week. So
okay.
Twice a week times 14. No one said there'd be math this early, DA. Like I said, coffee is important in my house. But I will say this. My son, last time he went, he's almost 8. He goes, Daddy, when I grow up, I want to work at Waffle House because they have the best food.
You see,
and he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. And on a Labor Day, encourage those dreams, Barrett. Encourage those dreams of careers right at the house. You can follow Barrett Salee. He's just such a good follow for college football fans. You should do it at Barrett Salee. Also, read him consistently at CBSSports.com. Barrett, I appreciate you doing it with us today, my man. There will be plenty more of these throughout college football season. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, DA.
Barrett Salee joining us this morning here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.